Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey, welcome to episode 77 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help marketers and founders like you sharpen their marketing skills by talking to some of today's top experts. Welcome to the first episode of 2020. And if you listened to my last episode, you probably knew that I wasn't feeling well during the holidays. I got sick, but now I'm feeling well. So I am excited about this new year. I hope you have set your goals. And for those who don't believe in goals, I hope you have a great January. But I have some really cool stuff in store for 2020. One of the stuff that I'm doing is I'm doubling down on podcasting. I am actually launching another podcast with a buddy of mine. I'll let you know when that comes out. But I am here for Growth Marketing Today. I am not going away anytime soon. This is my baby. And I'm going to be giving you and bringing you the best marketing experts I have so far. And this year, there's so many people in store. I just tweeted out that I got the co-founder of Webflow. If you're not familiar with that, it's a tool that allows you to create some really cool full web apps without knowing any code. So like I said, stick around for this episode. Let's talk about this episode. I have Amrita Gurney, and we talk about creating and launching successful conferences. There's a difference between launching a successful, memorable marketing conference and one that just wastes a lot of people's time, and that's planning. And it might seem tiresome and overly picky to think through everything before an event. She is the VP of marketing at Crowdrift, and she and her team just planned, organized, and hosted the first successful conference at Crowdrift C 2019. That was a few months ago. But in this episode, you're going to learn first how to run a marketing conference to boost customer engagement. Second, the success metrics and goals for running conferences. And third, the importance of diversity and inclusion in high-growth startups. Crowdrift has been awarded one of the best workplaces to work at last year, and it's because of their diverse employees. So I chatted with her about hiring a diverse team. Now, before we jump in, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools that I have to pay out of my pocket so I can really focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. So I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Rank Science. Rank Science is the easiest way for you to grow your organic traffic and get your content ranking higher in Google. If you're an SEO, this thing is cool. They actually have an A/B testing platform for your SEO without having to get engineering resources to make changes to your website. You can sign up for a risk-free 30-day trial at rankscience.com/growth today. And if you would like an ad-free version of this podcast, sponsor me on Patreon for as little as $2 per episode. And you get each episode a day before everybody else. You also get access to all the growth cheats I have so far. I think I have 40 now that I've written down pretty much every actionable tips I got from each episode. And you'll also get the one from this one. If you're interested in getting that ad-free version, go to patreon.com/growth today. Well, enough about this. Let's jump in my chat with Amrita. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to have Amrita. She is the VP of marketing at Crowdrift. I'm so excited because we follow each other on Twitter, LinkedIn. Like you said earlier, before we jump on this recording, we see each other's faces on the little profile icon.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think you've had, you're familiar with another Amrita in the Toronto community. So I'm not Amrita Mathur. I'm Amrita Gurney.
Yes. You're the one that's leading the team at Crowdrift. But yeah, I'm super excited because you just successfully launched a conference last month. But before we talk about that, I'd love to hear your story, how you became VP of marketing at Crowdrift.
Sure. So I started my startup career quite a while ago, and I've always been a marketer. So I was really excited to work in tech early in my career. And so kind of worked different startup jobs, always in more of a demand generation role, kind of worked up to obviously different positions along the way. And then I heard of Crowdrift actually through Hannah Abaza, who is the head of marketing at Shopify Plus. And I was having a coffee with her, and I was kind of looking for my next opportunity and wanted to join a particular kind of company at a particular stage. And so she had known CrowdRiff and recommended that I talk to them. And we also, both CrowdRiff and I, we had a common contact in one of our investors. And so he introduced me to Dan, CrowdRiff CEO, and the rest is history.
That's so cool that I've also been trying to get Hannah on the podcast, but it's cool like how it's all interconnected.
It is. We've got a great community here in Toronto, I have to say. And I think the marketing community is tight. I think we're all happy to help each other. And Hannah's been a great help to me.
That's so true. I think that's something that I should be going out more to marketing meetups. Is that your jam? Or do you prefer like having like one-on-one coffees with people?
Yeah, I would say probably more of a one-on-one thing. I used to go to more meetups and I just once in a while I might go if there's a speaker that I'm really interested in. But otherwise, it's just coffees, drinks, sometimes just video calls if that's all that works in our schedule.
That's true. Yeah, that's good to hear. And I'm trying to get myself more plugged in into the Toronto market. But for my listeners who might not be familiar, what is CrowdRiff?
Sure. So we are essentially a content marketing platform specifically for travel and tourism brands. And these brands rely heavily on visual content like photos and videos. So that's really our focus, is all about visual content. And what we do for them is we help marketing teams. They use our software platform to source photos and videos from a number of different sources, especially social media, get rights to that content, catalog that content through AI, and then distribute that content out to all of their digital channels. So we've processed over a billion visuals at this point. So we have a lot of data that we use that informs which visuals are going to work better. And so for brands that really heavily rely on visual content, they can for the first time actually use more of an informed, data-driven approach to choosing their visuals.
That's so powerful. And like, wow, it's impressive. You've processed over a billion images. I want to talk particularly about that conference, because the running a conference is expensive, but it also takes a lot of people power or effort from the team. I'm curious what was the trigger that started that whole conference?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that we had been thinking about it for a while. You know, we've been to other companies' conferences and really enjoyed it, especially if we're going to a conference for a company that we've partnered with, where we're invested in their tool. And so we noticed, first of all, that our customers were already organically forming a bit of a community, and they really liked talking to each other and meeting each other. So that was already happening, you know, something that we would notice at other events, that these customers liked coming together. And then the other thing that I would say also kind of lined up nicely for us was that we noticed that there was a gap in our industry around conferences specifically for digital marketing and social media managers at travel and tourism brands. There used to be a couple way back, you know, years ago, and then a couple of them just kind of folded or didn't continue. And so we saw that there was nothing really that was targeting the people that we work with all the time. And so the timing just really worked well. We were also at a size where we felt ready to make that leap because we had a pretty sizable number of customers as well.
The trigger said, let's do this. Was there any success metric that you were looking at to say, hey, you know, we would know that this conference is successful if we achieve this particular goal?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really articulate it maybe as a success metric. It was more, you know, what were the things that were on our mind? And I would say, like, number one, we just wanted to make sure that we got a certain number of attendees. So we had a number in mind of what we felt was a reasonable number given, you know, we had gone out and talked to other people who'd run conferences. I've also run user conferences in a prior role. So I had some history with, okay, this percentage of your customers, if they're happy, you know, which our customers are, you know, you should expect a certain number to come to your event. So we looked at number of attendees. I would say that was probably the main number. But the other thing that we wanted to measure was just the quality of the conference and the quality of the experience. And we measured that through the feedback that we got. So definitely we ran a post-event survey. We had lots of in-person conversations. And so we wanted this to be something that people really talked about and were excited to come back to next year. We didn't want it to be something something that was forgettable or something that people felt wasn't really worth their time and money. So those were the two things we really focused on.
What I'm hearing is it's more mainly for getting your customers engaged and actually seeing them face to face, or getting other customers to talk to each other, not mainly like an acquisition effort, more like an engagement, a customer engagement, or maybe even a retention or brand building.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think our first year in particular, I think we really focused heavily on getting our customers to the event. And we wanted to do it for a few reasons. I think for one, like you said, it is a really important way to kind of put a stake in the ground and say, you know, as a company, we believe in leveling everybody up in the industry. This is not just about selling product. It's about making everyone better at what we do. So that was one important thing. We also wanted, of course, customers to meet each other. As I mentioned, they were already wanting that. You know, we've had lots of people at other conferences get together for dinner or get, you know, want to get introduced over email. So that was already happening. And then the third thing, which was really a nice added bonus, and in some ways maybe as important as the other two, was it was a great way for our team and our customers to really have a lot of face-to-face interaction, because as you probably can imagine, only a certain percentage of our company gets to meet people face-to-face, depending on what role you're in. And so I think it was just a really nice morale boost and exciting moment for the team to be able to come and, you know, see us on stage, see these amazing speakers, see customers talking about how happy they are, and just have a lot of those just, you know, one-on-one hallway conversations as well.
That's true. And it also kind of establishes you as the leader in that industry. If I think about like marketing conferences that's hosted by companies like Inbound by HubSpot, or just recently Recode by Profitwell, it kind of lifts you up from like, hey, you just do online marketing, to now like, wow, you're organizing conferences. So that means your company is like super legit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for us, we've always taken a real interest in our community. And a lot of it just has to do with the makeup of our team, our personalities, and also who our customers are. And so to us, it was really a signal that we are wanting to continue to invest in the community. And I think our customers really noticed that. I would say most of the content had nothing to do with CrowdRiff. It was about storytelling and visual content and brand building and social media. And so I think they really saw that we were putting our money where our mouth is, because we were providing great content from mostly outside speakers and helping us all get better at what we do, which we think is just in the long run, of course, good for our business, but good for our customers.
That's so good. I think that just having that helpful mentality. When you pitched this to, were you the one who pitched this to the leadership team, or did it come from the top bottom?
Well, I didn't really, well, first of all, I'm on the leadership team. Oh. So I guess it was part of our ongoing conversations. I would say that it was something that probably all of us had talked about even a couple of years ago. We were sort of thinking about it. And then we'd had conversations with our board. They were very supportive. And then I think, you know, it's always a bit nerve-wracking to do it the first year, because you just never know, okay, how much is it really going to cost? And are people going to show up? And will it be good? And we've never done this before at CrowdRiff. So there's that normal kind of anxiety. But I would say that there was definitely never a question of should we do it. I think it was a more of a question of when is the right time. And this year really did feel like the right time. And I think for us, we also recognized that you're never going to feel totally comfortable. And that would be one piece of advice I have for other marketers, is that unless you've done this already like multiple times, you know, you're going to always feel the first year like, oh my goodness, like, is this going to work? And you have to just be willing to take that risk and give it your all and just do whatever you can to make it successful.
That's so good. I think that's really good point. I didn't know that the whole team and even the board was supportive of it from a few years. You've been discussing it for some time now. How about for other marketing teams? So what would be your suggestions whether they should or should not run a conference?
So one of the pieces of advice I got from one of our investors at High Alpha is they basically feel that you should just do it anyway. Like, you should do it even when you have 50 customers. It doesn't have to be a big conference. It could just be bringing people together for half a day or a day. And in fact, in a prior role, when I was running our user conferences, our very first conference, quote unquote, was 20 people in a hotel boardroom, just meeting, having dinner. It was really just like the seeds of what then turned into a several hundred person conference. So I would say, you know, if you have probably a certain number of customers. I don't know what that perfect number is, but maybe 50 if you're a large B2B company, 50 to 100. I think at that point, you can put some kind of event on for your customers. And then as you grow, you can grow that investment and make it into something even bigger. So I would say we waited probably longer than some companies wait, but there are others who never feel ready. And I would just say again, you probably will never feel ready. Just go and do it.
That's so funny. It's so true. I want to talk a little bit about the conference itself. I saw pictures online. It was very successful. People were like, a lot of my contacts online were like raving about it. How did you get the word out about the conference itself to get people to buy tickets?
Our customers are all over the world. Most of them are not in Toronto. So we really relied heavily on, first of all, our email list. I think that was the most important channel that we used because we have all of our customers' emails and because we were mostly targeting them. We also did invite some people who are not yet customers, and we did have some people come who are not customers. I would say email was number one, and then probably social media would be number two. We did a little bit of experimenting with, you know, running some ads to our customers as well. But I think email and then our customer success team, they've been, you know, really instrumental because they're having conversations every day with our customers. So we also really worked with them to get people excited about coming so that, you know, when you're doing your onboarding call or you're doing your account management call, that you also use that opportunity to really get people excited and encourage them to come.
No, that's great. I think email is definitely the first one. And on the other side with sponsors, did you also reach out to potential partners that you already worked with in the past or co-marketed with to sponsor the conference?
Yeah, so it's a great question. We didn't have sponsors this year. And I would say this was a bit of a, I wouldn't say it was tricky. It was more just something that I don't think we figured out in enough time. So we have partners that we love working with. We work with a lot of agency partners mostly. And so we had some conversations even internally, just thinking about, you know, how do we best showcase them? We also wanted our conference experience to be amazing. And so we were thinking about how do we make sure the content is what the audience is going to really love. And we didn't want it to feel like a trade show. So I think part of our maybe challenge this year was not having enough time to really design the right way for sponsors to participate. And so some of them just came and attended, which we're really happy that they did. In fact, all of our partners came as an attendee. And so we decided to, you know, forego any potential revenue that we would get from sponsors just to really use this first year to just to test and see how the conference would go and to get feedback from our audience as well as our sponsors, sorry, as our partners, to help us figure out like what's the right way to design this for next year. And so I think next year we would have sponsors. Again, we just need a bit more time to be really thoughtful about it. I think sometimes, you know, we sponsor a lot of events ourselves. And so sometimes you just want to strike that balance of not having too much sponsored content. But again, like it's a great support and we love working with our partners. So that's one thing that I would like to do differently next year.
I'm curious about your team that helped put this conference together. Like who did you have helping you? Like did you have somebody who's in charge of looking for the place or like that? I'm not sure, decorations or the food?
I am a very lucky woman because I've got an amazing group of people on my team, and I would never have been able to pull this off without the people that are here. So number one, a woman on my team, her name is Irene. I hope she gets to listen to this. She is a full-time event planner, and her focus is just our conference. So she really focuses on customer events, and the conference was really a big, you know, almost 90% of her job. And so she really took care of all of the organizing. I mean, I have to say she probably did the work of multiple people because she's just super organized. And so she was really the one that led all of the venue selection, the food. I helped with the content selection. So I helped with speakers, although Irene also did a lot of that work. And then the rest of the marketing helped team helped in different ways. So we have a great brand team. They did a lot of the design work, but some of that we also did outsource. So our brand team has just grown this year. And at the time when we started organizing the event, we only had one designer on the team. And so we brought in an agency partner to work with us on the identity and some of the initial digital experiences. And then otherwise, you know, we've got a great demand gen team. We've got people who help with email marketing and ads and all of those things. And so much of it was just done internally. And I'm just so proud of them and grateful that they were able to pull this all together. It's really a credit to them more than anything else.
When we come back in just a moment, I'm going to talk to Amrita about how she hired a diverse team at CrowdRiff. But before we do, I just want to take some time to thank the sponsor for this episode, Rank Science. Rank Science is the easiest way to grow your organic traffic and get your content ranking higher in Google. They have this AI-powered platform that gives your content team some superpower. And what I mean by superpower is, first, they've created this real-time search data and natural language processing to help you craft content that is highly relevant to searcher intent. So it maps it out directly to what users are searching for, so you don't actually have to guess anymore what users are actually looking for when they type in a specific keyword. This allows you to optimize your past blog posts and plan out and create new ones, giving you a step-by-step plan for easy success. Now, the second thing they do, which I think is really cool, is if you have a lot of landing pages, you can leverage RankSign's SEO A/B testing platform to easily test which HTML changes causes an uplift in your search traffic. As an added bonus, their platform actually allows marketers like you to make SEO enhancements to website without having to bother engineering resources again. Now, RankSign's used by hundreds of companies to grow organic traffic, from startups to publicly traded companies, including customers like BuildZoom, GoldBelly, Sweetness, and Career Karma. You can sign up for a risk-free 30-day trial at rankscience.com/grow today, or you can find that link in the description of the show. Now, if you don't like ads like this, you can support me for as little as $2 per episode for an ad-free version of this podcast. You also get each episode a day before everybody else, be part of our private Slack group, and get access to all of my grow cheat sheets that I've put together for each episode, which takes all the actionable tips in one document. Now you can go to patreon.com/growtoday, and or you can find that link in the description to help with the cost to maintain and grow this podcast. Enough about this. Let's jump back in my chat with Amrita. I saw that CrowdRiff was one of the best workplaces to work at in 2019. I'm curious about a quote you had on an interview with Betakit that you take a very strategic approach to growing your team and ensuring that it's very inclusive. I'm curious what kind of things you look for as you grew your marketing team to make sure that it's as inclusive as possible.
Well, I would say that some of what we've done so far, I would say, has been more organic than planned, if I'm being totally honest. And I think that's just the nature of how our team has grown. I think our makeup of people, even from the early days, was already quite diverse. And so I think that set a really great foundation for not having maybe the same typical biases that a lot of companies have when their founding team is maybe a bit more homogenous. But I would say since then, and certainly in the last year, you know, we've invested a lot in HR. So we've got a great HR and culture team. We've just hired an amazing VP of people, Megan, who's worked at both startups and larger companies. And so I think she is really leading our efforts around doing everything from training to actually having more of a diversity and inclusiveness strategy. And I think 2020 is really where I feel like we're going to be able to go a lot further, building on the great foundation that we have, but actually putting a lot more structure in place so that we are doing the right things to continue to build on the great diversity that we have.
You're very intentional about having an inclusive team. I'm really curious about your one piece of advice to marketers who might aspire to be VP of marketing one day. What would be your one piece of advice?
Well, I would say the first thing is just make a difference. So whatever your role is, you know, throughout my career, I've always tried to be somebody who got results, because at the end of the day, that gets noticed. And sometimes it's not enough to just do the work. You also have to make sure you're sharing your work so people know that you're getting these great results for the team. So focus on making an impact would be my number one piece of advice. And then I would say a close second would be to really develop your communication and management skills, because I think as you get more advanced in your career and maybe, you know, advance in terms of management, it's not just about being a subject matter expert. In fact, I think it's much less about that. I don't feel like I'm the smartest marketer in my company. I've got people on my team who are better at demand gen, better at design than I am, better at content. And so I think your skills change and you have to learn to recognize how to hire great people, how to foster an environment where those people are supported and do their best work. So I think just making sure that you're not just thinking about your technical and tactical skills, but really thinking about your communication and management skills as well.
That's good. Just a few more questions. You know, your CrowdRift is in the content marketing space. What are some trends you see that people should be aware of, whether that's in content or in marketing in general, that people need to start thinking about and really start planning for?
That is a tough question, because I think as a marketer, there's just so many things that we're looking at, and it's hard to know sometimes which ones are going to stay. But certainly in our space, the number one thing that we see is that visual content is becoming more and more the way people communicate. When you look at whether it's Instagram stories or even on LinkedIn or email, like the visuals are often what get people to stop and notice you. Video, of course, I think is a trend that's not going away. So I would say just make sure that you're looking at the way people communicate and making sure you're communicating in that way as well. And then I would say the other trend that I'm seeing, especially in the SaaS space, is a bit of a return to brand, which I'm super happy to see because I'm a big believer in brand. But I think we went through this period, certainly over the last 10 years, where everything was really about like very technical marketing, and it was about who can execute the best SEO strategy. It was all about being data driven, which I think the data is still an important part of informing what you do. But now it's a bit of an arms race. There's lots of smart people who know how to get found in search. There's lots of smart people who know how to technically put together a sort of multi-channel digital strategy, but it's the content, the creative, the brand, all of these other things that you do that I think are much harder to copy. And so I see marketers hopefully continuing to invest more in, you know, messaging and positioning and storytelling and brand and things that we have neglected a bit in the startup world. And I think are now starting to realize that that can really make a difference.
That's really fascinating you say that. Well, definitely the conference, putting together a conference and making sure that it's very valuable and helpful is a great way to build a brand. Are there any other initiatives that you have at CrowdRift that's like really focused on that, like really blowing up the brand of that company?
Mm-hmm. So we are definitely planning to invest more in brand in 2020. And we are looking at other ways to tell our story. I think, again, using a lot more video will be an important part of what we do. And just thinking about messaging and storytelling in our narrative beyond just doing it to drive a conversion. I think you're going to see a lot more from us just to share our point of view, to give back our knowledge to the community, to share our customers' knowledge with each other as well. So I think next year you'll see a lot more of us putting our customer front and center, which we really love to do because they're the ones that are the experts. So I think those are ways that we can really invest more in brand.
When it comes to video, I'm curious, like what other than just highlighting the customers, are you going to be doing more, like, I'm not sure, YouTube videos or like more vlog style? What kind of videos can people expect from CrowdRift?
Yeah, I think I'd love to see, again, a lot more customer videos, not just about case studies, but just customers sharing their marketing advice with other customers. And I'm actually still in the process with my team of really figuring out what the right strategy is around using YouTube versus other channels. So I think some of it's still not quite buttoned down, but I think a lot of it is showcasing the voice of our customers, industry experts, and of course, our people as well. So you'll hear a lot more from our CEO and from some of the other leaders in the company.
That sounds great. I just like to wrap up. Where can people find out more about you? If you have a blog or Twitter, this is your your time to just give out any call to actions.
So I would say probably the two places I'm most active are LinkedIn and Twitter. So it's basically pretty easy to find me. It's my first name and my last name all together. So Amrita Gurney all together on Twitter. And then you can search for me on LinkedIn. I think I might be the only Amrita Gurney on LinkedIn. And then in terms of Crowdrift, of course, there's our website, but we actually are really active on Instagram. I think it's a really nice way to get a peek into what life is like at our company. You'll see lots of amazing travel photos. So our Instagram handle is just at Crowdrift, and we have a hashtag life at Crowdrift. So you can see tons of great visuals, videos, all kinds of content from our team.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Amrita. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Well, this is for this episode. Did I miss something? I'd love to hear what your takeaways are. Let me share with you my three key takeaways. First, video is a trend that's not going away. Whether it's Instagram stories, LinkedIn, or email, visuals are often what gets people to stop and notice you. So make sure you're looking at what the ways people are communicating and make sure that you're communicating in that way. Second, your story could be your competitive advantage. Use that. Your features are easy to copy product, it's easy to copy, but it's hard to copy content, creativity, story, and branding. Your brand can become your competitive advantage. No one has the same story as yours. So make sure you leverage that in your content, in your pages, in your website, so that you can create that experience that nobody else can copy. And third, you can run an in-person event for a B2B company with 50 to 100 customers. I always thought you needed more customers to launch a successful in-person event, but it really depends on what your goals are. For Amrita, it's to get customers together and meet them face to face. So if that's something on your mind, go start planning it. Make sure that it's planned well and pick your success metrics with that. Now, that's it for this. Like I said, if there's any takeaways that you think that I miss, I'd love to hear from you. You can send me an email, ramly@growthtoday.fm, or I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Rank Science. If you're in content marketing, this thing is cool. They use real-time search data and they have an algorithm to help you craft content that is relevant to searcher intent, and it maps it out directly to what users are searching for. You don't have to guess anymore what searcher's intent is with each keyword. They've created that for you. This allows you to optimize your past blog posts and plan out and create new ones, giving you a step-by-step plan for easy success. You can sign up for a risk-free 30-day trial at rankscience.com/growthtoday. Please also support me. There's three easy ways to do that. First, subscribe and share tell your friends about this podcast. I'd love for more people to hear about this. And if you can either share it on Twitter, LinkedIn, or just even when people are chatting over water cooler, if that's still a thing these days, just tell them about this podcast. Second, join the Growth Today mailing list. You'll get the cheat sheets directly emailed to you. Enter, support me on Patreon for as little as $2 per episode. You get an ad-free version of this podcast and get each episode a day before everybody else. Be part of our private Slack group and a bunch of other cool perks. You can go to patreon.com/growthtoday, or you can find that link in the description of this show. Well, that's it for this episode. Like I said, thank you for sticking around. This is the first episode of 2020. There is a lot in store for this year for this show. Well, until the next one, this is your host, Ramly John. And as always, keep on growing.